Look at the star map.
Yes.
And see if you can find anything that you would know is obviously dead.
Obviously what?
Dead. If there's anything dead.
Oh,
yeah, that's the victim is obviously dead. His tongue is sticking out. Anything else? This is, there isn't any, let me tell you that, so you can stop searching. Now, remember the different magnitudes, the stars were the first and second, first magnitude, second magnitude, the brightest are the first magnitude, second. If you look in that victim, there's no star in that victim that is brighter than the fourth magnitude. Most of them are the sixth magnitude. So, in other words, it's almost unseen. Can you hear that? As we studied last week, originally from the ancient star maps, that was a lamb. Now it got to be a wolf for some reason. But it was a lamb, which is... Now, keep that in mind. The only thing dead in this mystery of the stars that is obviously dead, there's a symbolism, like there's holding the head of the lion, and the lion's head has to be dead, but but this thing is the obvious dead thing, right? Okay, let's see, just keep that in mind. Okay, what we see then in this picture is a clearer indication of the price that was paid by the cross, that was indicated by the scales. And Christ was not only, we see that he was not only crucified, he was dead and buried. Now that's extremely important in the mystery. Because otherwise we'll think of dead as something like we've normally thought of with ourselves. You know, we say, well, I'm dead. Go to Romans 6. Verse 1, what shall we say then? Shall we continue in sin that grace may abound? God forbid. How shall we that are dead to sin live any longer therein? Know you not that so many of us, as were baptized into Jesus Christ, were baptized into his death? Therefore we are buried with him by baptism into death. And like as Christ was raised up from the dead by the glory of the Father, even so we also should walk in newness of life. Okay, now I want you to understand then that from the star map here, indicating what happens to the victim, from seeing that Christ was not only dead, but he was crucified, but he was dead and buried, from the standpoint of then our life in him, we are dead in him. I mean, it says that 100 times in the scriptures, right? Okay, operative word dead, okay? Now let's go to the law and see what it says about dead. Go to Numbers 19. This is the law with regard to the purification of the unclean. And the first part of it, down through verse 11, or down through verse 10, is what the preparations are that's necessary for to be cleansed if you touch a dead body. Now, somebody read verse 11.
He that touches the dead body being man shall be unclean 7 days.
Okay, now read, we could go all over the place. Let's just do that, just so we can see its massiveness. Verse 16 says, and whosoever touches one that is slain with a sword in the open field, or a dead body, or a bone of a man, or a grave, shall be unclean 7 days. Okay? Harry, go and read Leviticus 21, verse 1. Tylene, read Lamentation. You want to? Okay. Read Lamentations 4, verse 14. And Bernadette, read Haggai 2, verse 13. Okay.
And the Lord said unto Moses, speak unto the priests, and the sons of Aaron, and say unto them, there shall none be defiled for the dead among his people.
Okay. Lamentations, it's right after Jeremiah.
Verse 14, they have wandered as blind men in the streets. They have bathed themselves with blood so that men could not touch their garments. could not testify.
No.
They have wandered as blind men in the streets. They have polluted themselves with blood so that men could not touch their garments. Just read that one.
And then, no, go, I'm sorry, read 15.
They cried unto them, depart ye, it is unclean. Depart, depart, touch not. When they fled away and wandered, they said among the heathen, they shall no more sojourn there.
Okay. To pollute themselves with blood is the metaphor for touching the dead body. Okay, so then others have wandered and said, touch not the unclean. The unclean is the one that was touched by the dead body. You understand that? You know, Haggai 2. Read
then
the one.
Haggai.
Okay. Haggai. Yeah, that's right.
Then said Haggai, if one that is unclean by a dead body touch any of these, shall it be unclean? And the priest answered and said, it shall be unclean.
Okay. The reason... You have to understand, first of all, that the law is spiritual. It's not optional. You understand that? I mean, we think the law is optional, as we've been taught on. But in order for the law to shut up our mouth and therefore shut up our brain, we have to see the law is the way a thing works. Okay, what have we learned? We've learned that if you're a believer, and you've presented yourself to Christ as a living, or God as a living sacrifice, that you had to die. So that you are dead. And we know also that by the law in numerous places, we just read a sampling, if you touch the dead body, you're unclean for 7 days. That means if you... doesn't mean that. But if it means you, if you touch yourself, you're unclean. But we're not talking about physically touching. We're talking about mentally touching yourself, because now the law is spiritual. Do you understand that? If you go into yourself and touch yourself internally by considering analysis of self, by definition, you are unclean. Doesn't matter what you think of it.
Because you're dead.
Right, so you've touched the unclean thing. You've touched the dead body, and you are Levitically unclean for 7 days. Now, let's go back to Numbers. In verse 14, this is...
What numbers?
Numbers 19, verse 14. Well, let's start. 13. Whosoever toucheth the dead body of any man that is dead, and purifieth not himself, defileth the tabernacle of the Lord, and that soul shall be cut off from Israel because of the water, because the water of separation was not sprinkled upon him, he shall be unclean. His uncleanness is yet upon him. So that means, if Harry is... If I give breath to Harry's stuff, then I have touched Harry's dead body. You understand?
Meaning if you get sucked in and anxious or worried.
Yeah.
Or if I start delving in psychobabble and trying to solve problems after the flesh, then I have touched another dead body.
It's not just if you touch your own dead body, it's if you touch somebody
else. Understand that?
For mankind, period.
For mankind, period. You understanding this a little bit? This is the law. When a man dieth in a tent, all that come into the tent and all that is in the tent shall be unclean 7 days. So, I mean, if it says when a man, the word tent is a stupid word. It's when a man dieth in the tabernacle. Okay? And every open vessel which hath no covering bound upon it is unclean. And therefore, everyone that has no covering, spiritual covering. That's why there's so much weirdness today, in terms, because there's a whole generation of people without a spiritual covering. And whosoever toucheth one that is slain with a sword in the open fields, or a dead body, or a bone of a man, or a grave, shall be unclean 7 days. And for an unclean person, they shall take of the ashes of the burnt heifer of purification for sin, and running water shall be put into into a vessel. And a clean person shall take hyssop and dip it in the water and sprinkle it upon the tent. And upon all the vessels, upon the persons that were there, and upon him that touched a bone, or one slain, or one dead, or a grave. So some, there has to be some transaction that's connected with the ashes of a red heifer and the sprinkling of water and hyssop in order that that uncleanness is dealt with. And the clean person shall sprinkle upon the unclean on the third day and on the seventh day, and on the seventh day he shall purify himself and wash his clothes and bathe himself in water and shall be clean at evening. But the man that shall be unclean and shall not purify himself, that soul shall be cut off from among the congregation, because he hath defiled the sanctuary of the Lord. The water of separation hath not been sprinkled upon him, he is unclean. And it shall be a perpetual statute unto them, that he that sprinkleth the water of separation shall wash his clothes, and he that toucheth the water of separation shall be unclean until evening, and whatsoever the unclean person toucheth shall be unclean, and the soul that toucheth it shall be unclean until evening. Now, there's something obviously going on here, because if you touch the dead body and don't apply and there's no, it's not atonement because it's not sin, but there is no action taken for the touching of the dead body, then you're cut off from the people. Now,
what's the how do you know that that's happened?
Well,
leprosy.
No, this has nothing to do with leprosy. The greatest indicator that we have that it has happened is that there is an anxiety or an unsubstantiated or irrational fear of whoever is your spiritual covering.
So there's you're out of arrest, you're not.
Right, and if you come in, you maybe think you're in arrest, but if you see the one that that's the priest in your day, and you feel fear, if it's irrational fear, then that's 90%, 99 times out of 100, that's the indicator that you've touched the dead body and have not made or accepted the provisions for to be made clean.
Because he's your covering, and that's what's wrong with the world.
Right.
So they don't know they're supposed to be O-N-E-O-E, or you start having arguments with you in your mind. Or
that's right.
That's your clue.
Now, you remember you haven't studied it. When the temple is described, it goes, the first thing that's described is the Ark of the Covenant, and the last thing is described is the curtain. That's the way it's described in the book of Exodus. When we apprehend it opposite. We apprehend first the curtain, and then we apprehend, finally, the Ark of the Covenant and the mystery of the mercy seat. In the book of Leviticus, when the offerings are described, the first offering described is the burnt offering, but that's the last one we apprehend. And the last one described is the trespass offering, and that's the first one we apprehend. Okay, keep that in mind. It's what's important to God first. The Ark of the Covenant is most important to God. The burnt offering is most important to God. But man apprehends it in the other order. You understand? Now, in the New Testament, Jesus said, in the Greek, it says, "Deny yourself, pick up your cross, and follow me." Okay? Now we have a hint from the Old Testament, because we know that it's apprehended the opposite. So what in truth happens is we first make some kind of decision to try to follow him, then we find out that we have to pick up the cross and die, and then finally we're able to abandon ourselves. Go to Mark 8:34. Somebody read it.
Called the people unto him with his disciples also. He said unto them, "Whosoever will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me."
Okay, that, remember, deny, take up his cross, follow me. That's said innumerable times throughout the New Testament, right? There's not a person in the universe that has ever done it the right way. I mean, what's important to God. We think that it's important to God is to follow Him. That's the first thing is the most important to God, and that's to abandon yourself. Because from God's mind, everything else is done. If you abandon yourself, then the mystery of Christ will automatically, just like a seed grows, work itself out. So from God's mind, the most important thing is to abandon yourself, deny yourself. From man's mind, he thinks the most important thing is to follow Christ. So he starts off trying to follow him. Then he gets confronted with all this stuff, and then he tries to pick up the cross. And then he picks up the cross, and then he starts self-analysis and makes it impossible to abandon himself, because he continually moves back and forth, touching the dead body. Understand that? And so there needs to be, the process is right. I mean, we haven't done anything wrong. We've all worked and attempted to try to follow him in some way to the best of our understanding. Then we're confronted with the cross. And now, for most of you, you have an inkling of what being dead means. But the problem is, you keep going back and analyzing it, and so there's no power to abandon yourself. Understand that? So there needs to be some transaction to cause you to be in a position to abandon yourself. It's all the power of God. You can't do a damn thing about it. Let's hold that thought. This is important. Can you trust me on that? Go to 1 John 5. First part, whosoever is born of God overcometh the world. Doesn't look like that. All it looks like what's born of God around here is you sit and say, oh shit, a lot.
Where are you?
1 John chapter 5, verse 4.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Is that too difficult for this? For the discovery?
The Baptist and Methodist?
Baptist and the Baptists and the Bible church people and all that. I'd love to talk to some Baptists. I'm in the mood to talk to some Baptists.
Go find some Baptists.
Go give me some Baptists. That'd be great. For whatsoever is born of God overcometh the world, and this is the victory that overcometh the world, even our faith. What the hell does that mean? Well, he goes on to describe it, if we have ears to hear. Who is he that overcometh the world? But he that believeth that Jesus is the Son of God. And the only way we can understand that is this is he that came by water and blood, even Jesus Christ. Not by water only, but by water and blood, and it is the Spirit that beareth witness, because the Spirit is truth. Okay, so we got water, blood, and Spirit, and now we talk about it. For there are three that bear witness, or that bear record in heaven, the Father, the Word, and the Holy Ghost, and these three are one. And there are three that bear witness in earth, in the earthen vessel. The Spirit, the water, and the blood. And these three agree in one. And when they agree in one, that if we receive the witness of men, or the witness of our mind, the witness of God is greater. And so because that witness is greater, if we have apprehended the water, the blood, and the Spirit, now we are at this point. Abandon yourself. The only way you can do that is by apprehending the waters. Pick up the blood, pick up your cross. The only way you can do that is by apprehending the blood. And follow him. The only way you can do that is by apprehending the Spirit. So abandon yourself or deny yourself, pick up your cross, and follow him as the water, the blood, and the Spirit. When those three agree in one in the earth, and the three in heaven agree as one in heaven, when they touch, look out, world. Now, for this body of people, We have not grown whatsoever as a total. We've remained approximately the same number of people for almost 5 years. I am convinced that this body can go no further without the apprehension of the waters of purification, so that you stop touching the dead body. So you're empowered to abandon yourself. Capisce? Everybody understand that a little bit? The only way you can do that, the only way the waters can be apprehended, is if you see the need. So let's talk about that a minute.
Have we ever studied the word?
Sure.
I don't remember studying. Like, sometimes you talk about God's finger, not God's finger, but God's in the beginning of time.
Yeah, we studied the blood covenant, remember? Like walking through the covenant, the meaning of the blood.
The water, I'm...
You never studied the water.
I'm sitting here thinking, let's see. Blood. The water's first, I'm really screwed up. Because I don't know
where. Well, the water's first to God.
Well, but still got to know what it is. The last, maybe.
It's last to you, first to God.
So we have tapes on it.
Huh?
On
the water? Yeah, but Stealth didn't understand it from the tape, so what the hell? Okay, now we're at this stupid juncture again. Do I stop the stars and study the water?
Sure.
Can you pray? This is the question I had at night when I was praying. If I'm dead, who's praying?
Well, you have to go by what Christ used. It's the same dichotomy that that Paul said, I'm crucified with Christ, nevertheless I live, yet not I that liveth, but Christ that liveth in me. I mean, there's only, again, in the universe, there's only two things. There's only the whore and the bride. So, the fear of God comes on you so that you, the prayer is that you are the bride. But you're certainly not Tylene.
Yeah, well, that's what I was trying to figure out. All that.
We pray, the way we pray reveals where we are in this path. Question is now, do we go into the water right now?
Well, I told you, I talked to this guy. I think I said anybody else. I talked to this guy at the planetarium the other day about doing a thing on the stars. He's real interested. Do we want to start motion on that at all?
No. I told you that.
But you said you didn't have the outline already. Do you want to start working on the outline already?
No. Okay. I mean, it's obviously not ready to go external until it's been worked out in us. We're just on this first.
So you want to wait through?
We're in the second decan, of the second constellation.
In other words,
no.
A couple of years.
Just
well,
not
like trying to talk to someone about.
No, I understand.
God, and you don't know what the hell you're talking about.
Yeah. No, I don't want any of that done at all. But I'm in a quandary right now.
How much diversion are you talking about? Like, how long will it take to explain the water? I mean, enough so that we could go on with the stars.
Well, if we had ears to hear, it would take about 3 minutes.
Because the water is judgment, isn't it? Purification?
Jealousy?
No, again, we think in terms of water is many things. I mean, just like blood is many things. What we're talking about is a distinct area of the law called the waters of purification. And they cover three things. They cover the idea of touching the dead body, and that's dealt with by the ashes of the red heifer. And leprosy, and that's dealt with by the water that we kill a bird and drop the bird in it and dip the other one's wings and let it fly away. And then the third one is the waters of jealousy. And so those three areas of the waters of purification cover. I don't really want to get into leprosy or to waters of jealousy. I'd rather just constantly, if we're going to do this at all, I just want to talk about touching the dead body, because that's where we are. Everybody's going inward. And if you see that the waters have already dealt with that, and the ashes that have gone in it have dealt with it, then you can be free from going into self. And you, but again, my question is, you won't apprehend it unless you need it. Unless you know you need it. So I guess the question that I would ask is, are all of you tired of self-analysis and touching self and going inward in self? And
that's kind of the thing that I was talking about last night. You know, there was like a lot of stuff, but I didn't feel like, you know, being a part of it for even a second. And I was just, you know, I could see the hunger and the desperation of even the dancers and of the women. And I could see it all around. That's where I lived at one time. That was my land. That was my home. And I couldn't even like just fill in that spot just for a second to remember. I mean, it was all just by. And I already knew by looking in the eyes of someone that it was just like, you know, totally desperate. I could remember that way. And that's that kind of what you're talking about.
Well, that's the evidence that you didn't touch it, but what happened if you did? Or what happened if you touched self? What if you go in and start analyzing yourself and questioning?
So that takes the form of like getting something right or of needing to do something. You know, when we say if you feel like there's someplace you need to go and do it until you're full.
So what I'm saying and asking the group is are you tired or full of being concerned with yourself and touching yourself?
Yes.
And if you are, then we will stop and let's look at some New Testament scriptures.
Because that's the only way you can hear it?
I'd say, yeah, I mean, it's without question. You have to have the hunger, you have to know the need before it can be apprehended. Otherwise, it'll just be... Let's go to 2 Corinthians 6. Verse 14. Okay, be ye not unequally yoked together with unbelievers. What fellowship hath righteousness with unrighteousness? And what communion hath light with darkness? And what concord hath Christ with Belial? Or what part hath he that believeth with an infidel? And what agreement hath the temple of God with idols? For you are the temple of the living God, as God hath said, I will dwell in them and walk in them, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people. Wherefore come out from among them, and be ye separate, saith the Lord. Touch not the unclean thing, and I will receive you, and will be a father unto you, and you shall be my sons and daughters, saith the Almighty. Now, whenever the word unclean is used, it means specifically these, it's the trigger that you know they're talking about the waters of purification. So they're talking either about leprosy or touching the dead or the waters of jealousy. Now, 90% of the time, that series of scriptures is talking about you going inward. It very rarely has anything to do with you and somebody else. Understand? Because where you are yoked isn't. You're yoked at the shoulders. And unless you are yoked at the shoulders with somebody else, and they are affecting you, then it can't affect you. You're only, it's Christ and you, you're unequally yoked with the dead. You understand? So most of the time it doesn't apply to anybody else. That's just another thing. I mean, you know, if there's a need there and there's hunger, then you you're there. If there's not, you'll leave them, just like you always have your entire life. But this is talking about you. What fellowship hath Christ or light with darkness? What concord hath Christ with Belial? It's the heart with the head is what it's talking about here. Now, the only thing that can deal with the uncleanness is water, the waters of purification. To touch not the unclean thing. I mean, if you're a Pharisee, you'll think that means somebody else. But the spiritual man knows it's the dead body. You can't touch this unclean thing. Can you hear that? Because the other will happen by nature. I mean, you know, either if you're around people that you would have applied this to, then and you're honest, then life will happen. They'll either leave you or be embraced. You don't have to have some little rules of behavior with your God to other people. That's just Phariseeism. This, you need to hear this. Go to 1 Corinthians, 2 Corinthians 6. You're not unequally yoked together with unbelievers by being in a contract with them in an oil deal. You understand? You're unequally yoked together with an unbeliever when you have given, let this evil one, this dead one, rise, and this is the unbeliever and this is the believer. Okay? Now, there may be occasions where it's true that it's you vis-a-vis someone else. And mostly that would occur where there's great antagonism. For instance, if Crystal and Lee were in a business together right now, I mean, you wouldn't need a rule to know that something was really wrong. But where the real message of being unequally yoked is in here. This is where the yoke is. It's on your shoulders. Because you've let the government be on two people's shoulders, Christ and yours. Okay? Touch not the unclean thing isn't external. You got that? Being unequally yoked with unbelievers isn't external, just like everything else. It's all internal.
There's still this thing when I'm dealing with people that that I feel like I have to watch what I say, you know, because I don't want them to think that.
Then you're genuine. Touching. Then you are touching the unclean thing,
right.
And there's no abandonment of self.
Right.
And what you're doing is you're.
Yeah, it doesn't help them at all.
Well, but even it doesn't help you either because you're blocking the blessing. Okay, let's look at another place. I forgot where it is. Let's pick on Baptists. What do Baptists teach that unclean thing is there? Touch not the unclean thing. Or don't they teach?
It's the other people.
Well, liquor, I'm sure, pornography, R-rated movies.
Let's look at some other unclean things. Go to 1 Corinthians 7. Chapter 7, verse 14 is a real important one. Start in verse 13. And the woman which hath a husband, that this is for you, Sherry. Where are you? Can you hear this? Okay, listen. And the woman which hath a husband that believeth not, and if he be pleased to dwell with her, let her not leave him. For the unbelieving husband is sanctified by the wife. You got that? Okay.
Where's Laura?
Else were your children unclean, but now are they holy?
Gosh, Mike, we're all right. Since the kids are taking
care. Okay, I made a decision. We will spend at least a couple days studying the waters of the ashes of the red heifer. It's real big. If I mean, I just love this. I love the idea that deny yourself, pick up your cross, and follow me. Follow me is a spirit, pick up your cross is a blood, and deny yourself is a wash. In other words, you can't do a damn thing. So, trying to deny yourself is a contradiction in terms.
End up starving to death or getting sick or something. You just can't do that.
Can't do it. Okay, well, we'll do that for a couple of days. All right?
Amen.
Harry's been around studying the waters like three different times and he still doesn't understand it.
Still trying to get it. But I'm still sticking tires of that feeling of fear, that feeling of guilt.
So do you ever have, let me ask you this. Have you ever been afraid? Who in this room has ever been afraid of me? Let me.
Afraid of what?
Who in this room has ever been afraid of me?
Ever?
Ever. Not even once.
You mean like little times? Yeah.
Ever been afraid of me?
Yeah, right.
Any kind of fear. Who has ever been afraid of me? Sherry thinks she's never been afraid of me.
She has to think. You know, she cocked your head and you know, there's something going on there. Well, let me think.
Okay. And I did this. Have I ever hurt, done anything to hurt any one of you?
No.
Have I ever done anything to steal anything from you or defraud you in any way? In all the years that I've known you. Not when you have to think about.
See, I remember.
So the first one, I mean, you stripped away our, helped strip away our craft, but nothing to hurt.
Yeah, what you did, I mean, what happened hurt, but what, you know, you didn't do it.
Okay, my point is, if you have a whole many years of experience to know that I'm harmless as a pussycat, why would anybody be afraid of me? Why would there still be irrational fear of me? Okay? The only reason is because your spirit knows that you have touched the unclean thing, the dead body, and I can sense that.
It's like we can sense it too.
Right.
Because when you have to say a damn word. I mean, it's just.
So that's why whenever you sense that, that's why there's probably other tells. But a real good tell that you've touched the unclean thing is you have an irrational fear of me. Because when you're abandoning yourself, nobody here is afraid of me. That's crazy. Now, all of the kids, by definition, by law, are clean. Do you understand that? Okay. There isn't one kid that fears me. Even when they really, really screw up, they don't fear me. Because they are, by law, Levitically clean because they're sanctified. Do you understand that? It's really neat. But that's really, if your irrational fears are right, then they should have twice the irrational fears that you do because then they're principled. Point of it is, I believe that one of the great tells that you have touched the body, the unclean thing, is an irrational fear. And it wouldn't be just to me, it'd be anybody that was, you know, that was your spiritual covering. Like in the other groups, there's a fear of whoever their Bible study teacher is and me. I mean, so you just get the blessing of having, you don't want to be afraid of me.
I get it. People think, well, narc.
The biggest thing is people that you know
you.
Can read you, that you know.
Yeah, but I'm saying it's even beyond that. It's a seminal thing that is at your spirit level. Because you know that you've touched that part of you know that you knows you've touched the dead body.
It's like you can run from it, you can avoid it, but if it's not dealt with, it's not going away.
Right.
You can't hide
from it.
Yeah. But and that's why let's look at this. Matthew 23. See, I hate this. I hate when it's red.
Why?
Huh?
Mm-hmm.
No, I mean, it makes it seem like that's more important or that's... My new Bible, it's the same plates, but there's no red in it. So it makes me very happy. Let's go to verse 23. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you pay tithe of mint and anise and cumin, and have omitted the weightier matters of the law, judgment, and mercy and faith. These you ought to have done, and not to leave the other undone. I mean, all of the New Testament, they say Christ never said that you should tithe. Well, that's bullshit. He says it all over the place. You blind guides which strain at a gnat and swallow a camel, woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you make clean the outside of the cup and of the platter, but within they are full of extortion and excess. Thou blind Pharisee, cleanse first that which is within the cup and platter, that the outside of them may be clean also. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you are like unto whited sepulchres. Okay, now what's the reason the whited sepulchres are so important is that they couldn't walk over or be within a certain distance of any grave because then they were unclean, right? You remember that? So when anywhere in Israel, it was the law, in the Talmud there's huge sections about this, about exactly how to do it. It was distinctly scheduled on when they had to whitewash the graves so that they would always know, and where, if there was an animal buried, or, so they would always know, so they would always keep away from being contaminated by that dead body. And they don't understand that was just a type. See, so he says, woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you are like unto whited sepulchres, which indeed appear beautiful outward, but are within full of dead men's bones and of all uncleanness. Again, remember, uncleanness, whenever you see that word, it's the operative word that you know they're talking about. He's talking about something specific in the law, which is purification. The water is the purification. Even so, you also outwardly appear righteous unto men, but within you are full of hypocrisy and iniquity. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, because you build the tombs of the prophets and garnish the sepulchres of the prophets, and say, if we had been in the days of our fathers, we would not have been partakers with them in the blood of the prophets. Wherefore you are witnesses unto yourselves that you are the children of them which killed the prophets. Fill up then the measure of your fathers, you serpents, you sons of the serpents. How can you escape the damnation of hell? So all of those things Christ is talking about, touching the unclean thing, making the outside appear something that it isn't. None of you would do that, would you? Huh?
Christ was on the cross, then he didn't have to wait 7 days,
did he? He was the one that died. But when people, but, that's not me, but he came out, when he was resurrected, he was unclean.
When he came out of what?
When he came out of the grave. The resurrected Christ walking around the disciples, all the disciples that touched him, when Thomas touched him in the side, he was by the law unclean then for 7 days. When Christ came into the room where the disciples were, all of the disciples were unclean and couldn't go back to the temple without going through the waters of purification, even though they touched the resurrected Christ. When Christ raised Lazarus from the dead, he was unclean, levitically unclean.
Well, that Christ was unclean after he.
Well, because you think unclean is sin.
Yeah.
Unclean isn't sin.
What's the difference?
Well, you're just unclean by the law. That's why
you don't get over it.
That's why the blood doesn't do anything good. The blood doesn't do anything for clean, you know, for being clean or unclean. It has to be the waters.
I'm not there because
not supposed to be.
You're not there yet, I hope.
Of course not, because I'm going to study. I said we were going to spend the next two or three nights in Bananas studying purification and uncleanness. Before we can study purification, we have to you have to know what uncleanness is, right? So I plan to make you know what uncleanness is.
Well, the first thing like Abraham, was Abraham ever unclean? And then this comes up with, well,
right.
Sin. Well, geez, all right, wait.
Yeah, that's what that means.
Yeah.
Yeah, sin versus unclean, I've never really known it.
Well, one is dealt with by the blood, one's dealt with by the water. But this hasn't been studied. I challenge you to go to a Christian bookstore or even go to a Jewish synagogue.
So once again, it's not separation.
Uncleanness causes separation.
And it's really the only thing that is separation, right?
Really, bottom line, yeah. All right, let's go someplace else. Let's go to...
That kind of is a pretty good shot when you start thinking of something that's not covered by the blood.
No, it doesn't say God is judging you. It doesn't say that anywhere else.
Well, the cover is wrong. Dealt with.
Doesn't say... It says that you are separate from the people. Didn't say you're not saved.
Right, but it still has to be dealt with. You're separate from the people.
Hear me, my friend. The only place that you can ever deal with uncleanness, you can't, it's never, there's no way you're ever unclean for touching a dead body in the world.
Right.
You're not unclean for touching the body in the wilderness. The only place you're unclean for touching a dead body is in the promise. And since in the temple there can't be a dead body, it's the distance it takes from from the borderline of the promise to the gate of the temple. So understanding and beginning to apprehend uncleanness is a huge, huge thing. It means that if you know the need, if you've apprehended the need for it, that means in the mystery of God, you are in the promise now.
That's why they tied that string around the rope around the guy's foot, so that when he went into the priest would go in and...
That was the blood, though. That was not the unclean. Yeah, that was the on Yom Kippur, on the Day of Atonement. You're only atoned for by the blood.
But obviously, everything we've learned, it's this water thing doesn't take 7 days. It can be an instantaneous thing.
Well, because that's what... Now you're beginning to understand, maybe the first time, what it means to redeem the time. Redeem the time, for the days are evil. Okay? Anybody else have any sort of general questions before we talk about?
I just always have this image whenever we start talking about water and the water system through the temple. You know, why that always comes to mind, but it does.
Well, most people, when you talk about water, they think the only thing they think about is baptism. This isn't anything to do with baptism.
Same thing as rivers of living water? Is this the same stuff?
What?
Is this the same thing as the rivers of living water?
No.
Right, okay.
See, that's what's the matter with the Western mind, is that it has to be linear. It has to be, well, if the waters mean, if the running, if the living water meant, then it must mean that. No. It's a totally... The Bible is a series of pictures.
Richer than we ever wanted.
But I thought, you know, this is where I get confused, because I thought it was all the same thing. I mean, basically, the picture's telling the same story.
It is. The finished work of Christ. It's all the finished work of Christ.
But you can't get the stories mixed up.
Well, you can, you do. But it's if you could remember just one thing all of the time.
Yeah, I know.
That one thing was, let nothing confuse you from the simplicity that is in Christ. And you'd never, ever need to know any of this stuff.
It
didn't matter, because you'd remember that Christ has completed it, you'll always be at rest. But the only reason that all of these manifestations, all of these offerings, the waters of purification are necessary, and all this is so that it permits, in the mystery of God, you to push all barriers, and wherever you push, and how far you push, in whatever area you push, at the horizon, there's the finished work of Christ. And part of it is the revelation of, you know, the offerings, part of it's the waters, part of it's the mystery of the blood, part of it's the mystery of the journey. But it's all just one picture of one thing, one story. But it's the richness of that story that we slowly but surely apprehend as we study the scriptures. Okay, we don't have time to get into it. So we will study waters of purification for the next few days in Bananas. Okay?